I'm Sid Garza-Hillman, and this is what I think.
Just finished a retreat at the resort, guided hiking with a absolutely stellar couple. I had a really good time with them, and it's all about me. I don't think they probably did not have a good time, but honestly, God, you know, it's like, hey, who's it about? Who's this about? Anyway, we're the third day, we go a little bit lighter. We walk along the coast, look at some seals, and there was this guy there when we got to this platform where we overlook the rocks and the seals. Pretty great. Anyways, this guy's standing there, and he starts talking to us. Really nice guy. He's describing stuff. He thought we were tourists. I was like, I live here, man. So, you know what? If I don't know everything about seals, then that's a seal, right? Anyways, and so he's talking about, and he goes, you know, I'm from out of town, but I come out here, but I'm just here to just paint a picture, just look at this view and hear the sounds and just kind of plant it in my brain. And also how I feel. You have to pay attention to what you're seeing and also how you're feeling, because then when you go back to where you live, you can draw on that. You can bring that out when you're having, you know, stress or whatever. You can sort of bring that out. And I was like, you know what? That's not true. You can't do that. Mm. You can't bring memories out of hiding. I wish I could. Hey, there's something called Vipassana. Vipassana? I don't know, whatever. You know, the whole thing about the words in the India, and everyone talks because it makes them feel like they're wise. You know what? I got been there, done that. Yes, you're wise, great. Doesn't matter what you do in your life, but you're wise because you say swashana when you're doing, you just say lay flat, and can we just move on with the things that we want to do in our lives? Title of this episode, by the way, Practice in Simplicity. Nailed it just now. Anyways, there was an article about Vipassana retreats. They're 10-day, usually silent retreats, mean no talkie, and this is the thing. There was an article about it, so it's kind of, anyway, so here it is. This quote, and I'll link to it. It's in NPR. These retreats teach Vipassana meditation through the teaching of S.N. Goenka, whatever, and he's kind of a guru at the heart of this network, end quote. Well, you lost me already, the guru. You know I have, if you read Six Truths, you know I have a guru problem. As soon as there's a personality, like people go, oh, Wim Hof, you do the Wim Hof. I go, yeah, but I don't want to, that whole thing. You know, like I don't want to meet him. I don't care. He kind of seems weird to me, like not in a good way. But I like the stuff. Quote, ready for this? Lots of people said that their first retreat, or it's a long quote, so bear with me, okay? Said that their first retreat or first several retreats really helped them and really brought them to quite an exciting spiritual plane. It almost sounds kind of mystical and godlike. You're on cloud nine mentally, and they come out and they feel calmer. They know how to process their thoughts better. Their life feels easier as a result. So they go to another, and they have kind of similar feelings, maybe not quite as intense. And then the feeling starts to fade, so they do another retreat. Then a lot of people said they end up struggling to sleep, so they would meditate more because they had initially felt this meditation would help them to sleep because it made them feel calmer at first, but effectively end up meditating through the night all day, every day, for weeks on, months on end. You see how I sped up toward the end of that ridiculousness? Here's what you're looking at, guys. Anything that you do, any retreat that you go to, whether it's diet, exercise, you're going to feel amazing. That's what a retreat is designed to do. And then when you get home and the real world starts to hit, retreats don't prepare you for that because they don't exist in the context of your life. So even this Vipassana, hey, I went on a silent retreat, man, and I feel all wise, and why am I getting stressed about traffic? I better get addicted to the retreat and keep going back to the retreat. See what I'm saying? It's the same model. It's the same quick fix model. It's the same thing, which is do it or don't do it. But if you think it's going to affect you long-term in the context of your life, you got another thing coming. It's the hard work of living a good life is the hard work. You can kick it down the road. Take a 10-day vacation and don't talk. It's amazing. Go for it. I would rather, if I had 10 days off, hang out with my family. That's just me. But sometimes I wish my kids would go on a silent retreat, like at my house. I'd be like, can you guys do a silent retreat? And if you feel really good, you can just do it again. And if you stop sleeping well, just do that thing. But anyways, people have negative like it went on to talk about the negative ramifications. And by the way, there's studies coming out that showing like a fair amount of people in meditation have negative effects of meditation. I have theories about that. Again, I think when you separate yourself daily and do this kind of mindful, whatever the hell you're doing, and then you don't, and that's great, but it isn't a substitute for doing the hard work of how do you exist in the context of your life in a calmer state. That then it's both great. I'm not saying, look, separate. I do that too. But I also work very hard and teach people, by the way, to sort of live meditatively. Hence my Ultra Running book is that model. To live meditatively, to be in a state of attention, to be in a state where you're breathing functionally. I hate the word functional, but you know what I'm saying. Naturally, all that kind of stuff. So there you are. There's my 2 cents on that. And just when I thought that I was having got that article out of my way. That frustrated me, but that's okay. I'll go on another retreat and I'll get that frustration just kick right on out of there. Oh, by the way, they made a point to say, and they eat vegan food. Oh, this is one of my favorite. They eat vegan food. So oftentimes they're calorically in deficit. First of all, the people I've known that have done it is not vegan. It's vegetarian, there's dairy and crap like that. But for the love of God, why does vegan food mean a caloric deficit? How do I know that they're not serving French fries and Coca-Cola vegan and whiskey vegan? Now, I will tell you, if they were doing a Vipassana retreat silent and there was whiskey, I wouldn't talk. I'd have no problem with that. You just pour me a single malt scotch and I won't say a freaking word, not one. I got no problems with that. And I'll probably come back for more. Okay. I also, speaking of articles, somebody said, 8-hour time-restricted eating. And this, by the way, this is the title. But somebody said, God, you know, there's a higher risk of cardiovascular death with time-restricted eating. And I was like, I don't know if that's true. And I said, if that's true, then I'm super surprised because I've read an absolute enormous amount on time-restricted eating and listened to many podcasts with scientists who are actually doing the studies on this. And I've never heard a higher risk of cardiovascular death. Then I found the article. It was in the New York Times. It's a, wait for it, 91% higher risk of cardiovascular death. 91%. That's mad. I've been doing this for like 3-4 years. I'm like, holy crap, I'm a walking time bomb here. Side note. Well, I'll get to that later when I get to the subject of this podcast, okay? Which is simplicity, because the whole intermittent fasting, time-restricted eating is convoluted beyond ridiculousness. But okay, fine. Back to this. So I look at the article and I'm reading through it. And luckily, the New York Times was like, yeah, this is not that great. But here's a couple little gems that I thought were fine. So kudos to the New York Times because, you know, I have my issues with them. But in this one, they were like, yeah, this is a bunch of crap. This is a bunch of crap. So listen to some of these beauties are just fantastic, okay? There were just 414 people in the 8-hour eating group. And they tended to be younger and less educated, have lower income and less access to food, wait for it, and be more likely to smoke than the other participants. So you're saying, wait a second, just get me, people who can't afford to eat, so therefore they're on a time-restricted eating, and they smoke more, is it? I think it must be the time-restricted eating thing that's raising their risk of cardiovascular death. I don't think it's the probably junk food because that's the cheapest game in town if you are not you don't have a lot of money. And also cigarettes, which is, by the way, not the cheapest. Have you priced cigarettes lately? Thank God I don't smoke. My God, I'd be homeless by now. It's expensive. I sound incensed. That's a crime that they charge so much for cigarettes these days. The research accounted for these factors in their analysis, but the study did not show that this style of eating caused deaths from cardiovascular disease, only that the two were linked. Dr. Dariush Mazafarian from Tufts called the study very problematic. Ready for this? The 8-hour eating group may have included many people who were very busy or faced other challenges that forced them to miss meals or eat erratically. Come on. How do these things even get to the light of day? How do they even get to the mainstream to be discussed by people like me? I have to discuss it now because you put it out there. Now I got to deal with it. Because otherwise, people who listen to me are going to go, you know what? You advocate for intermittent fasting and people die all the time. Smokers and people who eat junk food, but whatever. Lastly, before I just bore you to death on this. The group also could have included, I left this till the end. The group also could have included people who were already in poor health. Those with eating disorders or illness that reduced their appetite, for instance, which may have resulted in them eating during a shorter window, said Sachi Danda Panda. Ooh, see, I know that guy. I don't know him, but I've heard him on, because he is a big advocate for time restricted eating. I read his book, The Circadian, it's on the circadian rhythm of the body. Can you believe? It gets the light of day, the headline. And so here's my kind of thing about this sort of headline culture that we're in. And I took the piss out of a New York Times article, whatever, a few months ago, was, you know, saying that elderly people have to eat more protein because of sarcopenia, muscle loss, age-related muscle loss, and they cited a study that didn't prove the point that they were making. The study said, yeah, we don't know enough to make that call. And the New York Times quoted that, cited that article to conclude that you need to eat more protein. It's ridiculous. Absolutely. It should be criminal. Incidentally, I was talking to a friend of mine about this very thing, and he's a copy editor, and he was, for now, it's for what he does, screenplays or something, but he was in the newspaper business for a long time. And he said, the problem is, the problem is that there are no longer actual, rarely are there actual science writers. They used to have journalists that were science writers, and while they were journalists, they were very knowledgeable, or at least pretty knowledgeable in science, so when they were writing about it, they had a good background and could understand the terminology and be able to explain things very clearly. He said, that's really not the case now when somebody does an online article. It's sort of like, here, go cover that. So is it any big surprise that it's kind of half-assed and substandard? I mean, can we be honest? Good Lord. The practice of simplicity. A practice in simplicity. I just mistitled my own title. So here's what I want to talk about this week, because I've always said I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. I'm not the dullest tool in the shed either, but I'm not a genius. And I will tell you that just my own inclination, because I work with people who tend to be like me. I don't work with geniuses and I don't work with elite athletes. No, I just offended like half of my clients. They're like, I'm a freaking genius. What are you talking about? My clients are wonderful and they probably are geniuses. I'm just saying they're doing the business of life a lot like I'm doing the business of life. Okay. Confusion seems to me a major source of stress. I've worked with many people, taught many people who are way, way deep in the rabbit hole, especially in diet and exercise, but just deep, deep in the rabbit hole. And it's not helping them. It's this draw of gotta know more, gotta know more, gotta know more, gotta know more. And they're deep in, it's detailed and it's minutia, and it's they're losing the very basic things that are true and that can lead to the lives they want to live. But then they go, oh, okay, I feel this good. I better go deep in. I better go to another Vipassana retreat. See how I went down? I'm still pissed about that. That only happened 10 minutes ago. I'm still angry. Here's what I argue. Simplifying of most subjects is not only possible, but preferable. Okay? And now I'm going to live, and I'm living in the health and happiness realm. I got it. Fine. But things like do unto others. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's so confusing to me, given the damage that organized religion causes in the world. It's just so confusing to me, because the basic tenet, and I actually found the quote, the passage, in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. Math, it's Matthew, but I call him Matt 7:12. He calls me Sid the Kid. Secures down there. You go, hey, Sid the Kid. I go, hey, Matt. 7:12. In everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. This simple. Treat others the way you would have them treat you. Do you know how much crap would not be happening in the world right now if people embodied that? The very people, by the way, who are part of the religions that this quote is part of, that don't follow it. Because it's too, there's too much, their brains are about to explode. There's too many things going on. And back to the Vipassana article. It's to live a good life is not just hard work, but constant hard work. It's not just hard work to do it, but it's constant. It isn't a 10-day thing. If that gets you started to think about your life, okay, great. If a diet gets you started to think about food and to explore it and to kind of know how it fits in your life, fine. But if you think the diet is going to solve anything, you're going to go back to another diet when that one wears off and the excitement wears off and you feel like crap again, you have no skills or tools to build in an actual habit, an actual lifestyle change. It's hard work. It's hard work. Sure, be pissed about it and keep trying to spend your whole life fighting the truth that it's hard work to live a good life. Just spend your life causing yourself so much stress to fight against that, to try to make that not true, that you have to work your ass off to live a good life. Go ahead. See what happens. Or just go, yeah, it sucks. Some of it sucks. Some of it sucks, but on the balance, it's much better. Here's another one. Know thyself. Temple of Apollo at Delphi. Know thyself. Know thyself. Find out who you are, what I've been saying. And I love the Greeks, by the way. I've been to Greece twice, and that makes me an expert, can we be honest? But I love the Greeks. I love the Greeks. Used to go to Greek Easter all the time. It's amazing. Love the culture. Know thyself. Know thyself. Know thyself, and then, once you know yourself, treat others the way you would have them do the things to you, because you know you're kind of what you would want. And then we don't have to get all nutty nut-nut about so much minutia, and we're all treating ourselves crappy, and we're all talking about stuff that isn't moving our lives forward. It's one thing if you go, look, this is better, and the more we know about this, the better it's going to get. And that's sometimes true, I'm sure, and maybe there's, of course, there's technology where the more you know, it's getting better, but then there's also the stuff that's not that way, and the technology gets deep in that rabbit hole in the whole AI thing. Just simple. Simplify. Now back to the whole, you're going to die 91% chance higher death in 8-hour time restricted eating. Of course, that's ridiculous. But also, the whole time restricted eating thing. Here, can I just boil it down for you so we can just move on? But what are we going to talk about? Art, literature, painting, dance, hang out with each other, go on walks, go on trail runs. I don't know. Eat when it's light. Don't eat when it's dark. Okay, but what about apoptosis and senescent cells? Yeah, okay, fine. Leave that to the nerds in the labs, and that's great. They can prove what we already generally know, but okay, fine. Eat when it's light outside, not when it's dark. So if in your house it's light, that's not outside. So if your lights are on, and look out the window, and if the window outside is dark and it's still light, all you gotta do is go, hey, wait a second, it's not daytime. I'm going to put down the pastrami because it's you tricky lights, you incandescent bastards. Eat when it's light, don't when it's dark. That's intermittent fasting. Okay? We can get all deep in the weeds and then all of a sudden, that's all we're thinking about. And then we're losing everything else in our lives that is more important. So a practice in simplicity. What can you do day to day that makes simple rules that you set for yourself, simple ways to live, simple lessons to live by, and see how those go. If you find yourself going down the rabbit hole, there is a damn good chance that your life is going to get worse as a result of that trek. And I've seen it so many times, and that's why dietarily I try to simplify things, that's why exercise-wise I try to simplify things, that's why my book, Ultra Running for Normal People, is to simplify, to take your damn watch off sometimes. Don't gather data all the time. Just run. Slow down if the hill gets bigger. Speed up a little bit if you're going downhill. If you feel tired, walk for a little bit. And then just be around. Be around. And by the way, that's what that's going to result in. And it's very, very important. So listen up. You're going to be more likable to me.
When you found your way to me, your hair shone like silver. When you hovered around me, your eyes bright like silver. Silver's more pretty than gold. And silver's more pretty than gold. T to this day when I wake to you. I'm soft into the gray. And when you shut everything out, all that sharp is dulled to gray. And clouds are much sweeter than blue skies. Clouds are much sweeter than blue sky. I'm trying to force things down. Just cannot be. I'm trying to plan things out that I cannot see. When you bring me back to me, I'm struck by the quiet of knowing. When I fear things falling from me, I'm shown by you the truth. And truth is much stronger than lies. And truth is much stronger than lies. Silver's more pretty than gold. And clouds are much sweeter than blue.